Does everybody have a handout? Because this is what we're going to be following. Okay, I think we have enough of them. Great. First of all, just an introductory remark. I think what we're doing here at Jacob's Creek is a tremendous, tremendous value to the life of the General Church. I was looking around. Who were we chatting with? I think the Dieberts. I think there's 9 different societies and then several other circles or people here who aren't in a society throughout the General Church. That is a huge, huge cross-section of the General Church. And here we all are together in outside of Pittsburgh in the Laurel Highlands. And yeah.
There are actually 9 ministers here as well.
And 9...
I
suppose so. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, just occurred to me, this is a really neat use for the General Church to be doing, and I think a really important part of the life of the church as we are all here together for 3 days with the primary purpose of learning more about what the Lord has to teach and all the wonderful things that come with being together for that purpose. So that just hit me, and just wanted to share that with you because it struck me how I suppose in the past there's been that kind of cross-section, but I don't think I really thought about it till this morning and looking around. So it's really nice to be part of that. I'm glad to be here. The other introductory remark is, again, in preparing and researching the material for this afternoon, it just struck me again that the letter of the word is where it all starts and ends. The letter of the word, the Old Testament and the New Testament. Drawing doctrine from the word, we're told in the doctrine of sacred scripture, is how we learn. And the Lord's done that for us in the heavenly doctrine. The doctrine is drawn from the word and confirmed thereby, it says in sacred scripture 50, I think it is. And that's something that I'm working hard to keep doing and doing more of, and something that doesn't maybe come natural in the new church because we have all the heavenly doctrine. But if we have a question, we should start with and finish with the letter of the word. Start with the letter of the word, see what the Lord teaches us about the letter of the word and the heavenly doctrine, and then confirm it with the letter of the word. And marriage is a wonderful subject to do that with. All of them are, but marriage surprised me how much the Lord has to say in the letter of the word that he explains in the heavenly doctrine and then confirms in the letter of the word on the question of why marriage is between one man and one woman, which is what we're going to talk about this afternoon. And by the way, the artwork, there's one, a front piece, I believe it's called, on the front, and then a couple little ones in the pamphlet. Those are actually from first editions of the Heavenly Doctrine. It's fun, it's neat artwork, and I think it's fun to include in handouts. But there is a reason that these have been picked and placed in this pamphlet, because they're from first editions. I don't know if this is from the Conjugal Love first edition or not, the one that's on the cover. So because, really on any question, we should start with the letter of the word and finish with the letter of the word, we started with the Old Testament on the question of why the Lord created us male and female and why marriage is between one man and one woman. And it's right here in the very, very beginning of the word, which tells us something about how important of a topic it is. And also in the first answer to this question, the Lord gives us the first commandment to people, which is related to marriage. So you can look, you can cheat a little bit and look, but if you haven't looked yet, what would you say is the first thing that the Lord commanded or commands people to do in the Word? The very first thing. Anyone have any guesses?
Be fruitful.
Be fruitful and multiply. That's the first thing he tells people to do. The first people created. He says, be fruitful and multiply. That's the first thing he commands us. Lots of other things we need to do too, but just the first in time if you're reading the word from start to finish. So I'll just read through this first passage from Genesis. And God created the man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. We're going to look at creation and the role of the creation of male and female, and how the reference to the differences between men and women, the masculine and the feminine, are from birth. So that's why created is underlined. Keep the idea of how the Lord created things from the beginning in mind as we go through these passages. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue her and dominate over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the heavens and over every living thing that creeps on the earth. Really, we could read these two verses and be done with the whole question. It's all right there. It's all there so clearly too, isn't it? What is marriage? A male, a female who are being fruitful and multiplying. That's it. That's what marriage is, created by the Lord. So really, we could kind of all go home and be done and not overcomplicate it. So everything we're going to look at, because the Lord tells us so much more, because he explains everything in great detail, but it all comes back to this right here. In the first chapter, the 27th and 28th verses of the whole word, it's all right there. Clearly, simply, it's not complicated. Male and female, he created them. Be fruitful and multiply. Now, we can get into the more interior teachings there and learn about subordination of the natural and the rational to the Lord and his truth, which is subduing the earth and dominating over the fish of the sea and the fowl. So there's so much more there. But when we're staying in this lane, what marriage is, why it's between a man and a woman, this is the first answer, and in some ways, really, the simplest and clearest answer, because the Lord created us, male and female, to be useful, to be fruitful and multiply. And in the very next chapter, the Lord says a little bit more about marriage, too. And this is where we'll find the first specific reference to really a marriage covenant, a marriage between a man and a woman. There's certainly the reference male and female be created to be fruitful and multiply, but in the very next chapter, we have a little bit more of a direct reference to marriage. And Yahuwah God caused a deep sleep to fall upon man, the man, and he slept. He took one of his ribs and closed the flesh in its place. And the rib which Yahuwah God had taken from the man, he built into a woman and brought her to the man. And the man said, "She this time is bone from my bones and flesh from my flesh. For this she shall be called wife, for she was taken out of man." And this last sentence is the key for our purposes this afternoon. "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh." So in the first two chapters of the word, very early on, we have that marriage is between a man and a woman so that they're fruitful and multiply. And then we have so that they become one flesh. So much of, well, everything in the book Conjugal Love is connected to just really these two verses, be fruitful, multiply, male and female, and one flesh. Everything is connected that we learn about marriage to these basic ideas. One flesh. We saw the groundwork for that with Ryan this morning. He talked about the heart and the lungs and the flesh and the blood, but one flesh, one person. So that's just the Old Testament, so much there already. And then it's so interesting what the Lord does in the New Testament. And by the way, if you have any questions that occur to you as we're chatting, please feel free to interject or raise a hand and I'll call on you or wave a hand if it's raised and I don't see you. I'd much rather be interrupted than wait till the end and maybe you forgot your comment or question. So please feel free and I hope comfortable to interject any thoughts or questions or ideas that you want to share as we go through this. So in the Old Testament, we're at the beginning part, drawing doctrine from the letter of the word. We're starting with the letter of the word in the Old Testament. We get the basics laid out. In the New Testament, the Lord goes back to the Old Testament and really doubles down on these ideas. And this is familiar, I hope, once we think about it a little bit. The Lord was being challenged on the definition of marriage by the Pharisees in the New Testament. He was being challenged. He said, it says, this is on the next page now, on the top of page 3, and the Pharisees came to him, tempting him. How do they tempt him? By saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to send away his wife for every cause?" This is an interesting dialogue these Pharisees are having with the Lord. They really are trying to undermine what marriage is, because there was some Levitical practice that was taken out of context that the Pharisees were trying to turn into a loophole that you could drive a truck through and have divorce for any reason. And that was the practice at the time for this loophole to be given out easily and have divorces occur for any reason. And they wanted the Lord to condone that. and therefore destroy marriage. Think of all the things that religion is asked to condone that would destroy marriage. This is the same thing. We're not in a new battle. Same battle, 2,000 years later. And here's the Lord's answer, because it's interesting. He's not responding directly to their question to him about divorce for any cause. So this is his response. And we could and should think and say, in the right context, the same thing today. And he answering said to them, have you not read that he who made them from the beginning, again, this is in reference to creation, the creation of the human race, from the beginning made them male and female. Also from the creation of the will and understanding, faith and charity, I'm thinking of the chart Ryan was showing right up here this morning, love and wisdom, the Lord. He who made them from the beginning made them male and female and said, on this account shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall be into one flesh. So the Lord is now referencing those two passages we read from the Old Testament and reminding the Pharisees, this is what I said then, this is what I say now, and in this last part of it, he'll say, this is what I say forever. Wherefore, there are no... Was that thunder?
Yes.
I don't know if the Lord's agreeing.
I'm not sure either. Oh, boy. Well, let's keep going and see what happens. Well, if you can't hear me in the back, let me know with the rain if that... Okay, so far? Okay. Wherefore they are no longer two but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man put asunder. So we're just in the New Testament still. The Lord's taking what he established in the very beginning of the word, in the very beginning to what he says to the human race for all time, preserved by divine providence in the letter of the word, and explaining what marriage is. And then when it's challenged in the New Testament, he again points back, says, nope, this is still what it is. And then says, this is what is going to be forever. The only way it'll change is if man changes it. Yes, Nathan.
One of the things about what the Lord has challenged, it seems like there's often two sort of wrong ways you could go here. You were mentioning one. I was thinking possibly the other one is he made a ruling on the no divorce in a way that seemed arbitrary. That would be another way he could have gotten people mad at him. Like the, a lot of cases they were looking for him uphold the law.
That's true. So they thought they gave him a no-win situation because if he made a definitive pronouncement, it would be unpalatable for one reason. And if he didn't, then he would be backing away from established law. And so once again, the Lord came up with an answer. I don't think I certainly could have on the spot like that. So thank goodness he did. Yeah, he figured out a way. Yes, Brad.
Well, one thing that struck me as you were reading it is just how he sets the terms. He who made them from the beginning. So God's the creator. He gets to set the terms of the covenant, and then it's what God has joined together.
Yeah.
So he points it back to you got to go to him. He's the one who made the terms.
And it's like Ryan said this morning, I think you got a question, who does that? Who does the marriage? It's the Lord. So the Lord marries love and wisdom, the will and the understanding, faith and charity, good and truth. And he's the only one who can. We're the only ones who can keep him from doing it, but he's the only one who can do it. Yeah, thank you. So that's just three passages from the Word, but I don't know about you all, but it stunned me how clear it was. It just stunned me. It is so crystal clear in the Word. It's surprising we need a whole book, Conjugal Love, to tell us more about it, because there is so much more there than I had realized about what marriage is in the Word. And the Lord's pretty definitive about it, very definitive about it. But he gives us so much more because we need it. So here we go, the question on the bottom of page 3. is what does the Lord teach in the heavenly doctrine to help us better understand these passages? And again, let's keep an eye on creation, because as Brad pointed out, it's what the Lord created. And we're going to see references throughout the passages now that we're going to take a look at to creation and how the Lord set things up, the terms that the Lord set things up based on. So we have two passages, and I'll just preview what we're going to do, and then we'll go ahead and do it. So we have two passages on page 4 that talk about the masculine and the feminine, male and female being different. And then on page 5 and 6, we're going to look at the special qualities that the Lord gave women. And then on page 7, we're going to look at the special qualities that the Lord gave men. And then we're going to finish with the passage on the back, which summarizes the result and restates the purpose of the differences between male and female coming together in marriage. So we'll just start generally. And in the very beginning of conjugal love, my logical legal training takes great delight in the way that the Lord set up the heavenly doctrine, because conjugal love is a great example. He sets up general propositions and then fills them in and fills them in and fills them in throughout the rest of the book, and conjugal love does that. So the very beginning, 32 and 33, is in the chapter that explains there's marriage in heaven. And it's so important to know there's marriage in heaven, because then we know it's eternal. And in that same chapter he says, well, the reason it's in heaven and eternal is because we're made male and female forever. And these are two passages where he explains a little more about that. So top of page 4, conjugal love 32. Since man lives as a man after death, and man is male and female, man meaning mankind, human, so man, male, and female, and the masculine is one thing and the feminine another, being so different that the one cannot be changed into the other, it follows that after death, the male lives as a male, and the female as a female, each being a spiritual man. The masculine cannot be changed into the feminine, nor the feminine into the masculine, and that therefore after death, the male is a male and the female a female. So that's established, very similar language to what we read in the very beginning of Genesis. And then conjugal love 33, a little bit more on the same idea. In the male, the masculine is masculine in every part of his body, even the most minute, and also in every idea of his thought, and in every least impulse of his affection. And so is the feminine in the female. And as one cannot therefore be changed into the other, it follows that after death, the male is a male, and the female is a female. Any questions before we talk about how they're different? Any thoughts or? Yes, Allison.
The thought that just came to mind is, it just said every part of his body, even the most minute, and mm-hmm. I was just thinking about blood transfusions and all those things, that, like, they're down to the littlest detail and being like, what do we do with that?
What about a heart transplant?
Yeah. Deep, bigger things too, but
yeah.
Even just.
Yeah, that's a.
Blood. I was just like,
So Allison's wondering about what happens when a female body ends up with stuff that came from a male body, blood transfusion, organ transplant, who knows what's, a hand transplant? Anyone heard about those happening? So what happens if there's some reason for what appears to be a mixture? Maybe it's even, say, the way you're born, right? What about that? How do we resolve what this says with what we see? Now, we could spend a lot of time on that, but for me, the way I resolve it is I go to see what the Lord says to do in a situation like that. What he says is, if you see that I'm saying something, just know that it's true and then I'll explain it to you. But we can't understand it if we don't first see it as true. It's a very interesting dynamic. It's called the affirmative principle. We actually talked about it last year, but we can't understand what the Lord teaches us until we can see and know that it's from Him and therefore true. Once we take that commitment. Once we make that commitment that the heavenly doctrine is the word of the Lord, then we'll be able to understand it. But if we don't, we're never going to get it. So my first answer to your question is believe this is the word of God and therefore that is true. And that takes a long time. We can't do that all at once. So if you have trouble with this, don't try to force it. Just put it to the side, focus on the things that you know to be true and that you don't have trouble with. And don't reject this as the word of God, but just don't dwell on it until you're ready to do it. The Lord will, in time, bring you to the point where you're ready. But if you're at the point where, yep, this is the Lord speaking to me directly, so everything there is true, we'll begin to see how it's true. And so here's one way to look at it. If a person is a male, and there's something about them, whether it's a heart transplant, whether it's a birth defect, where there's some genital ambiguity. This says everything that is in a male is a male down to its most minute part. So to me, there are a couple different answers that could be. First of all, maybe science doesn't know everything it thinks it knows. That I'm very comfortable with. Another answer is, well, if something seems to be of a different sex than what that person is, then maybe that's not part of them. Certainly the heart transplant, that's not part of them. So I think once you give yourself the opportunity to look at how the Lord might make sense of it rather than how we might make sense of it, all sorts of answers start coming up that we wouldn't think of if, nope, science says that this means that there's ambiguity so that this person's not male or female, we can't tell the answer. Well, we're never going to see how this is true if that's the... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just was going to say, I'm okay with the affirmative principle. I just was saying, this should be informing the way we deal with science. And so I'm just thinking, wait, should we not be doing, you know, should we have blood banks that are specific to male?
Oh, interesting.
Female? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
In I never. Detail.
That's a great question. I had never thought about that. I will think about it.
That's more where I was going with
yeah.
the question.
Oh, that's fascinating. So years from now, is new church science going to work better because we understand how this applies? Absolutely. Absolutely. Should we take a blood transfusion and not worry about it now? Yeah, I think so. But see, that's we can start thinking that way. So down the road, someone's going to answer your question in a way we couldn't conceive of if we didn't think this was true. So I don't know the answer, but when we do, we'll have better science as a result. Great question. That's exciting. All right, sorry. I'll get back on track here. Okay, so if we've got a male and a female and they're different down to their most minute parts, what makes us so different? Want to take a look? All right, let's go to page 5. We're going to start the title for these next couple pages, the masculine is one thing and the feminine another. We're going to start with the feminine because I think it is the least well understood and the hardest to articulate. So we're going to try it, but not with our own words, with the Lord's words. I love this next passage. Conjugal Love 56. There are men talking about women because the Lord has Swedenborg asked them about women. Why? Because the Lord wants us to have these words right now. This is what they say, these wise angel men. The universe was created by the Lord, a most perfect work. But in that universe, nothing was created. Creation again, from creation, from the beginning. Nothing was created more perfect than woman. Beautiful in countenance and graceful in manner. You will get no quarrel from any man on this passage. At all. So this sort of sets the groundwork for a little bit more detail. And we'll go into that in the next passage here. So what is it that is more beautiful in countenance and graceful in manner in a woman that a man has no chance at? Conjugal Love 2:23. That there is no conjugal love with the male sex, and that it is with the female sex alone. That's what it is. Conjugal love with the female sex is the beauty and countenance and the grace and manner. And this is talking about from creation. This isn't meaning a wife who's married. This is a woman by being born a woman, a female. And from this sex is from female, conjugal love is transferred into the male. This I have seen attested by experience. Now there are some great passages about the experience that the Lord has Swedenborg witness so he could report to us. I don't think we have time to go into them, but they're worth reading. There's one about men and women together, husband and wives in heaven, and the wives are removed and the men begin to really lose. It's very funny. They begin to lose an understanding of marriage and conjugal love because of the feminine sphere from which it comes to them through the Lord, from the Lord to them, is removed from them. And then they come back and they feel so much better. It's amazing. Okay, in agreement with this experience is the following reason. The Lord, the masculine, the Lord gives us reasons for everything in the heavenly doctrine, which is why it's so comforting. The masculine is intellect-oriented, and the feminine, will-oriented. And this explains a little bit more about Ryan's last point where the two columns go together. It's the will orientation of the feminine and the and the understanding orientation of the masculine that come together in a marriage. And an intellectual form cannot grow warm with conjugal heat from itself. So the will, the understanding orientation of the male mind cannot grow warm on its own. On its own, it's cold, but only from the conjunctive heat of one in whom that heat has been implanted by creation, from creation again. Consequently, it cannot receive that love except through the will-oriented form of a female adjoined to itself. That form being a form of love. So it's conjugal love that a woman has, that woman has, that makes marriage have to be between a woman and a man. A man can't get that love any other way. Here's some more beautiful teachings about this. This is hard to articulate, isn't it? Because, okay, now what are you going to say conjugal love is? Well, let's just keep going. The sphere of conjugal love is received by women, and through women is transferred to men, and this because women are born, again, born from creation, born loves of the understanding of men, and the understanding is a recipient. It is the same with love of infants. This love is from no other source than the conjugal love implanted in every woman. So think about what the Lord brings to the human race through women that cannot come, does not come to the human race through men. Conjugal love, the love of infants, wouldn't be here without women. What an incredible, could there be a better gift to humans than women? And that's what these angel men had figured out and thought it was so important because the Lord wanted it to be reported to us in Conjugal Love 56. So remember, we're talking about created male and female. We're talking about what's different between male and female, which requires that male and female, one of each, be married together. So conjugal love, we wouldn't have the inclination to marry at all. We wouldn't have the inclination to love a person of the opposite sex, men, if it wasn't for women. But it's actually even broader than conjugal love or the love of infants. And this is the thing that blew me away as I was researching this. So if we go to page 6, we're going to see how what the Lord has brought to humanity through woman is even broader than just conjugal love. Conjugal love 160 at the top of page 6. Love cannot do otherwise. Now this is in the same line of thinking in conjugal love, explaining the differences between men and women. Love cannot do otherwise than love and unite itself to another that it may be loved in return, its essence and life being nothing else. Love wants to love, of course. And women are born loves. Moreover, love, and think about your mom when you hear this, or any other woman who has been very, very meaningful in your life. Moreover, love is continually working. It is like heat, flame, and fire, which perish if restrained from doing their work. So this is even broadening the idea of what comes to the world through the feminine beyond just conjugal love. And I don't want to say just, because we're going to see that it's not just is not a word you can put with conjugal love. And this is where we begin to see that. Divine love and wisdom. Really the philosophical centerpiece of the second coming, meaning it's the way that that everything works is in divine love and wisdom. Interesting, there's not a single chapter in Divine Love and Wisdom on marriage. Why? Because the whole book applies to a single marriage. Everything that happens in conjugal love or in Divine Love and Wisdom explains how marriages work. And this is how, one reason we know why. The very first passage, the very beginning of the very first passage in Divine Love and Wisdom. Love is the life of man. Now that word in Latin is homines, which is not a gender, is not a gendered term. It's not male, it doesn't mean male, it means mankind. But it says love is the life of man. So the book that where the Lord explains how the whole universe works begins with love, and that love is the life of mankind. Now, with that in mind, and we're still talking about women here, we go back to conjugal love, and it says conjugal love is also the fundamental love of all loves, the foundation, the fundamental love of all loves. It's all built on it. Celestial, spiritual, and thence all natural loves. The reason why conjugal love, considered in its essence, is the fundamental love of all the loves of heaven and the church is that its origin is from the marriage of good and truth. So glad that I came after you, Ryan, so you could help us understand what that means. And from that marriage, all the loves which make heaven and the church with man proceed. They all proceed from conjugal love. Conjugal love, then, is as the parent. And the other loves are as the offspring. So let's back up again. The Lord created male and female. The Lord created male and female to be one flesh. What the Lord created to go together, we must not put asunder. And what did the Lord specifically give women? Love. Conjugal love, love of infants. But he brings love to the human race through women. This is a much broader idea than I had realized. So I thought about, well, how can we confirm this in our experience? Because everything the Lord teaches us in the heavenly doctrine, we can confirm in our experience if we know where to look. So let's try this. We're a little more than halfway through, so it's good to kind of take a bit of an intellectual pause. So let's try this. We'll do it this way. Maybe a little dangerous, but look around the room. Look at the women in the room. Those who you know, just look at them quick and think, okay, what do I know about them? How wonderful they are. And if you're related to them, you know a lot more. Okay. Good? Everyone did that for a second? Or picture someone who's not here who is a woman who's very, very important in your life. Maybe they're already in heaven. And now picture life without that person. What you love about that person. What you know that person, that woman has brought into the world. Or picture this room half empty without those women who are here now in it. What's missing? Would you say love is missing? Would you say conjugal love is missing? Love of infants is missing? It would be a horrible place, wouldn't it? If you took, and that, of course, is in there too, what things are like without a feminine influence. It's not pretty. That's what the Lord brings into the world through women. It's pervasive. It is life itself. Love is the life of man. And conjugal love 34, which is the last passage on page 6, this is just about the exact same as the rest of the passage in Divine Love and Wisdom 1, which begins with, love is the life of man. It says, although love is so universal in speech, yet scarcely anyone knows what love is. Think about that. Love is universal in speech right now. It sure is. maybe more universal than ever before. But when he reflects upon it, being unable to form any idea of thought about it, and so to set in the light of the understanding, for the reason that it is not a thing of light but heat, he says either that it is not anything or that it is merely something flowing in from sight, hearing, and conversation, and thus affecting. It is entirely unknown to him that it is his very life. So this was a commentary on the state of the knowledge of what love was. Certainly at the time this was written, but this is timeless. I think this is a commentary that applies maybe better, or at least just as well today. And particularly in reference to conjugal love. It is entirely unknown to him that it is his very life. The conjugal sphere that comes into the world from the Lord through women, I think, is just about entirely unknown to the human race as being our very life. But if we look at conjugal love 81, it's not in here. The Lord says that one of the reasons or one of the purposes of his second coming is to reestablish conjugal love as it was amongst the ancients. So, yep, this is a situation we're in, but the new church is the antidote. And these very passages we're talking about here today is part of the solution. So we can know it. And that so we can act based on this knowledge. All right, so we could go on for a very, very long time about all of these ideas, but had to try to just focus on some just a couple of the ideas. This is a huge fundamental idea. If we just want to do it shorthand, male and female, and love is in the human race because of women. I just don't think we articulate that enough, or maybe we've acknowledged that enough, or maybe it's just me, I shouldn't say we, I don't know, maybe you all do and I don't, but I think the world's a better place if we all are very comfortable and promoting this in ourselves, in our relationships. This really is where chivalry comes from. Why should a man stand up when a woman walks in the room? Because she's the vessel for conjugal love. Whether she's married or not, whether she finds her conjugal partner on this earth or in heaven, why do you open the door for a woman, pull a seat out, whatever the... It's because we need to honor women for this purpose, yes.
I think it's interesting thinking about this in terms of you know, sexism issue and one sex being greater than the other, or one, I mean, I think we sort of gone in the direction of too much. Like, women can do everything the same as men, and I think that when we have that be the focus, we take away from this part, which is celebrating what women do.
Yeah, and yeah, yep, Leanna. When we really love and honor and act on a full understanding of what is male and female, I think the world's going to look a lot different. A lot different. But how could it be any other way? The second coming is just being learned about. So I'd like to look at it as exciting and positive, and if we teach our children and our friends these things, then they'll be able to live in a world that has more of it than we did. And we'll get to a place maybe quicker than we could even imagine, that, like the one you're talking about. Yeah, Brad.
Well, I'm just thinking that passage you read, I think, shows part of that reason why we do have that disparity, because love is not understood. It is harder to pin down because it's more internal, and so wisdom historically has been elevated and prized above. It's easier to talk about what is true, debate it, give awards for intelligence and all that kind of thing, and I think over time, if you want to feel valued and appreciated, you have to show that, and the more subtle, gentle qualities of love that drive everything go unnoticed.
Yeah. I would add paid to that list. Valued, yes. Appreciated, or paid.
Yeah. That, you know, yeah. If you want to feel of value in today's world, you have to, you know, chase after being viewed as wise rather than loving.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, Joe.
I would argue with the use of the word wise. I don't think it's wisdom that gets rewarded.
Right.
It's intellect, knowledge.
Oh. So not even wisdom. Joe's saying it's even worse than that. Well, let's stick with these hopeful, aspirational ideas. But you guys are right. You guys are right. I didn't want to get too much into that part of it, but it certainly seems to be good explanations of a lot of the states that we're in now, for sure. So I did the opposite, Brad, in collecting these passages, and tried to collect more of a focus on what's particular to women and femininity, because I don't think that's happened. Maybe even, I hate, it's so easy to say they, but maybe even historically in the church, perhaps. Maybe. That's certainly been the trend, I think, wider, so why not with us as well? So there's only two passages on the masculine part of the masculine is one thing and the feminine another. Yeah, so let's move on to those, unless there are any other thoughts or comments or questions. Okay, top of page 7. And we're actually almost done. So we have about 15 minutes left, so we'll see what we do with that remaining time here. Conjugal Love 165. That the conjunction of the wife with the rational wisdom of the husband is from within is because this wisdom is proper to the understanding of men and climbs into a light in which women are not. So, boy, we can react to this a lot of different ways. Because it says that there is a wisdom proper to the understanding of men that is something that women are not in. But wait a minute, women have conjugal love and we don't. So, that struck me reading this passage as putting these together after having thought about how fundamental it is what women bring to the world. There's a larger dynamic that certainly mirrors what Ryan was talking about. When we just think about good and truth, for instance, or love and wisdom, over and over in the word are loops of the internal sense that talk about regeneration, of course. And so which is first, good or truth? Love or wisdom? In time, it certainly seems like truth and wisdom occur first in your understanding so that we can change our acts and the Lord fills us with the goodness that comes from doing that. But you have to have the remains which are activated in the first place in your understanding to make those choices. And what are remains? Well, everything good and true from birth, but I think there is a goodness or a love element of remains that's more fundamental than the truth element. And I think that kind of mirrors the way that the human race works, with love coming into humanity through women and the truth or will or understanding orientation of men. Not that we need to argue about first and second, but it does help us maybe understand why it's harder to articulate historically what the Lord brings to the earth through women. Okay, so the male part, this understanding that climbs into a light in which women are not. What does this look like? The Lord gives us a great picture in this next passage. It is masculine to perceive from the understanding and feminine to perceive from love. And the understanding perceives things which are above the body and beyond the world, it being to these that rational and spiritual sight extends. While love does not go beyond what it feels. And this next sentence to me pulls together the male and female in a way that I continue to go back to. And I don't know if it'll have the same effect on your understanding, but it really has helped me an awful lot. When it does go beyond, it does this by drawing on that conjunction with the male understanding which was established from creation. So here we are, back to creation, how the Lord created everything, the way the Lord did it. For understanding pertains to light, and love to heat, And that which pertains to light is seen, while that which pertains to heat is felt. So what is more powerful, by the way, what you see or what you feel? From this, it is manifest that because of the universal difference which exists between the masculine and the feminine, the wife's wisdom is not possible with the man, nor the man's wisdom possible with the wife. So how does love operate? It operates in the form of truth. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but this may be making it a bit too simple in order to see the point in this passage. The feminine influence, love, into the human race can operate because of the masculine influence or wisdom or truth into the human race. And they work together. They work together. Love can operate in what it sees, and it can see through the masculine influence in the world. Now, we don't see all these, we don't see influences and see it as feminine. Sometimes we do, and see other influences, see them as masculine. Maybe sometimes we do. We just see the world that generally works. But the reason it generally works, and now there aren't passages that say this. This is commentary. So take it for what you will and go back to the word and either say that makes sense or it doesn't. And if you don't think it does, let me know, because then maybe I'll change my mind too. But the reason the world works to the degree that it does is because there is a feminine influence that's different and distinct. And because there is a masculine influence that's different and distinct. And they come together and they work. And if we can maybe think of things that aren't working in the world, we might be able to, with an educated guess, identify, well, there seems to be a lack of a masculine influence there, or there seems to be a lack of a feminine influence there. And if there's a lack of either one of them, there are going to be problems. Certainly going to be problems. And this passage puts them together in a way that is very powerful to me. When love goes beyond what it sees, it does this by drawing on that conjunction with the male understanding which has been established from creation. So these are just the two passages about masculinity that we're going to look at. And then really the final passage, which is probably one of the most beloved passages in the general church, in the new church, in any reader of the book Conjugal Love. The first part is what we're going to be so familiar with probably, but the second part, I don't know, this happens to me all the time. I'll read something that I know I've read before, and I'll think I've never read that before. And Conjugal Love 181 did that to me as part of this study. So the first part, we're so familiar with this. The states of conjugal love are innocence, peace, tranquility, inmost friendship, full confidence, and the mutual desire of mind and heart to do the other every good. We all know that one and love that one. We love it because there are women in the world, by the way. We wouldn't if there wasn't. But look at the last part of this. That these are by no means possible, except in the marriage of one man with one wife, is the conclusion from all that has hitherto been said. It also forms the conclusion from all that is to be said hereafter. That second part stunned me. Because it does. It confirms it all. It's right there. It's actually five of, and I think we need to transition to dinner, but we probably have some time. Where do we have time?
Dinner is at 5:30.
5:30.
So
we need to be out of here by 5.
No, well, their dinner seating is at 6, so we're not terribly tight on time.
I'll stay here until there are no questions or they kick us out.
You've got at least 5 minutes.
All right. I think, Elsa, your hand was up first.
Well read, but I think we owe it to the world to women left this room, you guys would go nuts. Well, if all the men left the room, I think the women would find it very imbalanced. I used to find that I couldn't stand to hear a bunch of women saying the Lord's Prayer together. It was also spooky. And it wasn't any other thing. That's a silly example, but there was no strong basis for something, even just in the language. And so I don't know whether ministers can do that job or not, but I think that's important, that the love is easier to understand and grasp the idea of than the wisdom. And it's really important. And the other thing is that in both cases, it's wonderful and it makes us all happy, but it is a tremendous responsibility. And we need to know that too.
Which part of it?
Men and women need to know that it's a tremendous responsibility.
You mean and we can only do our best.
We can only do our best, but we need to be aware of doing that, not just saying, look at the Lord, isn't that?
Yeah. That's a great point.
We respond or react or whatever.
Now, Lee had his hand up last, but he's sitting right next to you. Does that mean I should call on him next?
I find it a lot easier to figure out wisdom than I do love.
I'm glad you guys are together. How about, sorry, Lee, I don't want to cut you off.
I'm about finished.
Dave. Yeah.
So there's obviously you have a great imbalance between wisdom and love.
Yeah.
And it's reflected in the physical world.
Yeah. I think it's a great point. It's a great point. I think, my goodness, these doctrines they're here to save the world. They really are. Julie and then Rachel and Calvin, did you have your hand up? No. Okay. Yeah. Julie and then Rachel and then Brad.
Okay. Well, Elsa talked about we have a tremendous responsibility for working on ourselves, working on our marriages, working on our new church friends and societies. But we need to also think about what is our responsibility to take these truths to the world and say, world, the way you're thinking about men and women and marriage is not the truth. That's hard because we're fighting against a big wave of emotion-driven same-sex union laws and things like that.
Yep.
How do we work?
Yeah, what a great question. And I think the answer, the how is different in probably every single specific situation. And every interaction, it's going to be the way, because you're talking about charity, right? We're trying to spread teachings that will make people happy. That's why the Lord gave them to us. And how we do that is dependent on the individual that we're trying to love. As a church, though, it starts with the relationships that we're in, the families that we have, the schools that our societies decide to engage in as uses, or if there aren't schools there, the doctrinal classes that we have, the conversations with our fellow new churchmen. So it's kind of like the degrees of the neighbor. We start with ourselves, and then I think as we become stronger in our understanding of it, we'll gain wisdom in how to live it, and then gain wisdom in how to help with these ideas. But I don't think this is, you hear culture wars, yes, I mean, they're opposing ideas. But I don't think, it doesn't seem like a fight is gonna solve anything. Just doesn't. And maybe that's frustrating, because if you could have a fight and win, then you win. But it doesn't seem like that's how it works. I don't know. The future that I want to see is one where the new church is a place where people who want help living this way know they can come and get help. That's what I think would be wonderful. I don't know. A tiny bit of an answer, I think, Julie, to a huge, huge question. Yeah. Rachel, I think you're next. Doesn't
available
for help. Now, it doesn't mean we're not going to get attacked, even if we don't want to fight. That's,
yeah.
It'll happen. The Lord says that too in the New Testament. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
As it relates to intelligence.
Ah, interesting. Yeah.
Those get mixed up. That's where the women get a little, you know, feisty. And
oh, yeah.
Wait a second. Are you saying we don't have
intelligence? Right.
So I'm wondering, you know, what does the Lord say about these words that you're using?
Yeah.
Wisdom, understanding, rationality.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So just wondering.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I think we can actually do this pretty quickly. Remember all the, because of Ryan's help, they were up there for men and women, all those things. Male and female both had all those things from the Lord in them, in us. So that's the first and quickest way, thanks to Ryan's great visual aid. So we both have them both. And both men and women are rational and have a rational faculty and freedom with which we use that rational faculty in to make decisions. So what about the terminology that seems to associate maybe some of these things with men and some of them only with women? It's what conjoins. It's not what heaven don't have, it's what conjoins the two together. So both men and women have a will and understanding, a heart and a lungs. But it's when they come together, what is it that brings them together? And there's another great... Is this getting to your question? Okay. It's such a beautiful passage. When the Lord has Swedenborg go to the different heavens so he can learn about marriages in the different heavens. And one of the angelic couples says to him, and the husband's speaking, but his wife's affections are in his face with every word that he says, "She is my heart and I am her lungs." Or I can't, was it the other way around? No, but that was, if the husband or wife was speaking, I guess the husband, "She is my," he's got a heart and a lungs. She's got a heart and a lungs. So they both have both, but it is that special difference between the two that brings them together to the point where one would say about the other, "She's my heart, it's in me, but it's hers, and I am her lungs," even though she has her own lungs in her. I don't know if that helps. I tried to do it quickly. We can talk some more later, but I think what happens all too often is so easy to isolate little pieces of the heavenly doctrine, and if we take it out of its context, there's a great passage that talks about a single truth outside of its series isn't true. The Lord puts all of these ideas together in connected series. So if we can't say what, and this is a whole different class that Allison's been through already, but if we can't say what series a particular passage is from, then we need to go back and see where it fits into other things. So I think that's what happens an awful lot, is we'll take something and we'll say, "Oh, no, I don't like that." It's true. If you take it out of context, it's not going to be right or make sense. But if we wrap it up in the middle of the beautiful teachings that the Lord puts around it, in the doctrine of action, true Christian religion on faith, it says it exalts faith. Faith is exalted and perfected by putting truths together that fit together in the single series. So she is my heart and I am her lungs is my answer to your question, because it seems to capture so many of those things we need to have in mind to answer your question. Yeah. Matthew, sorry. All right. What do you need to get going? Okay, Brad, last word. And listen.
Gone through the multitude of every disorder imaginable, and then says the conjugal union between one man and one wife is the precious jewel of human life and the repository of the Christian religion. And I just think your beginning of, you know, first things the Lord says, you know, that it all goes, that basic concept is so simple and powerful that and I looked up repository and the connotation of that word, and a repository is a place of safekeeping. And that's what this concept is. And if we lose that most basic of concepts, the Christian religion is in great danger.
Thanks, Brad. Wonderful thought to finish on. Thanks, everybody.